All right, ladies, good morning. We're so glad that you're here with us today.
Look, it's a podium.
We're going to go ahead and get started with a, with a word of prayer. And I've asked my mom, Sally, to do that for us. So. Okay, yeah, let's go to the next slide. I'll do some quick introductions here. Thank you, sir. It's nice to have a...
an extra helper.
Yes, right. A TA. So introductions, first of all, you probably know, most of you, that I'm Amy Maurer, and I'm going to be joined today by Letitia Zignoni and Rachel McNeil-Caird, and we are assigned the task preparing to teach. So this is the How Do You Get Your Head in the Game class. So you, on Wednesday, had the class on classroom management, is that right? Mm-hmm. And then next week you're going to have, or Wednesday night, you're going to have the class on the curriculum binders. And that sort of gives you the overview of what it is that you're going to be covering. And some of what we're connecting to today sort of depends on what's in that curriculum binder. But it's a way to kind of get yourself big picture and think about some of your goals for being a Bible class teacher and how you can meet those objectives in your classes that you teach. So we have two passages that we want to consider before we launch in today. The first one up here is Proverbs 9:9. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous, and he will increase in learning. So we know that we all have a lot to learn from each other. We are three ladies here, are just volunteers who agreed to present on this topic. We know there's a lot of expertise in the room, and we also have new teachers that we want to encourage as well. We know that we all can get better all the time as teachers, as Christians, and so we're hoping that we can learn from each other and then be able to translate that learning into something we can share with our kids here. And then the 2 Timothy 2:2 passage is the one where Paul is encouraging Timothy to entrust what he's been taught to faithful men. And I kind of see that as something that we're doing as Bible class teachers. We're trying to entrust the Word of God and the joy of it to the kids, because someday they're going to grow up and teach their own children, and they're going to be the Bible class teachers, and we want to do our job to make that possible. So my task today is I'm the first up, and I'm going to be talking about clear targets. So Rachel made copies, and they should be on top of your binder that just kind of is our outline, and then there are a couple of documents that go with that. You also should have a note card, and the note card is how I want us to start today. So on this note card, I am wanting you to individually, just with your own thinking right now, consider your own goal. Why is it that you want to be a Bible class teacher? What kind of Bible class teacher do you want to be? And I'd like for you to jot down your thoughts about that on this note card. I'm going to model some of the pacing that Letitia's going to share with us here in a minute by telling you that you have 67 seconds to write down your thoughts about why you want to be a Bible class teacher. Okay, go ahead and wrap up your thinking. And then what I'd like for you to do is find a neighbor next to you. It's fine if you wind up in a group of three, but I want you to share your reason for why you want to be a Bible class teacher and listen to your partner's reason for why she wants to be a Bible class teacher.
Got your reason.
Brianna, are you
coming? Yes.
Okay, we're
my family.
Okay, where are you from?
Arkansas.
Oh,
okay.
So are you guys Bible class teachers at your location? Why do you like to teach? Or
yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I just like teaching kids.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies, let's go ahead and bring it back up here. You probably learned in your classroom management session that you had on Wednesday, that there's lots of different ways to bring your class back after you've given them some freedom to communicate together. I usually just say, bring it back up here, because I teach high school in my real life. You can try like waterfall, and then everyone goes, shh, or, you know, what do you do?
Yo, yo. And they say, what's up?
I say, 1, 2, 3, eyes on me.
There we go.
Yeah, that's
the preschool, right. You want to have a strategy for bringing your group back together. And then at this point, what I'm hoping is I can get somebody to, or a couple people really, to share with me what your thoughts are, either your own goal or something that you heard from a partner that you thought was insightful that you maybe want to add to your own list. Why do you want to be a Bible class teacher? It's called wait time. I'm totally good at this. I can stand here forever. Go ahead.
Well, Brittany and I actually said the same thing using different words.
That's awesome.
So,
do you like Brittany's words better than yours?
Because we said really the same thing.
You raise your hand.
Okay. I said my desire is to make an imprint on the minds of our children that will remain ingrained in their hearts for a lifetime, and as it relates to the love of God.
It's okay. Very poetic, too.
It is, I know. It's nicely expressed. Thank you. All right, so making that imprint, one idea. Do I have a different idea or something to build on that idea?
Donna. I like to be able to teach to show simple, real-life application. How do they apply that to their own life? And in a way that I'm approachable. They can approach me, and there's good eye contact. If you know there is, then they're engaged. And so you got to figure out ways to keep that eye contact going so you know they're listening and engaged.
Okay, so I'm kind of hearing two things there, actually. So one of them is this idea of, the second one is like making that connection, right? So that those kids feel like they have a relationship with you and are connected with you, right? And then the second thing is that you want to make the teaching like useful to them, so that there's something that they can do with what they've gotten from the lesson that we maybe in how they treat their brother or sister, or how they interact with people at school, outside, you know, the building, and within the building, too. Other ideas? Something else we want to add to this? Okay, so what you've just come up with, and it's something that you can refine over time, is your own mission, if you will, like your own goal. Why is it that it matters to you to be a Bible class teacher? And that goal is really the primary goal of why you're showing up and why you're in that classroom with the kids. You're going to have other goals, and we're going to talk about those in just a second. You're going to have a lesson goal. You're going to have a unit goal. But teaching is a human endeavor, and that means that you cannot control everything that happens in the classroom. The kiddos who come to you, they may have been bickering in the back seat with their brother on the way to Bible class. My kids have eaten like granola bars for dinner on their way from soccer practice to Bible class. There are a lot of things that are sort of like going on in kids' lives, and of course you want to have like ways to kind of marshal them in and engage them, as Donna was describing, to get your lesson and unit objectives taken care of. But fundamentally, you can't control everything, right? Sometimes kids are having a bad day. Sometimes a kid comes up with a response to a question that you weren't expecting. But fundamentally, one thing you can always make sure is that if your goal is to engage with kids, if your goal is to share with them the joy of the gospel, and if that's your focus and you can remember that, then it kind of doesn't matter what the kid brings. Like, you can work with that, right? So long as you just remember, like, hey, my job here is just to, like, model Christ's love. So I'm just going to be patient, and I'm just going to be kind, and that's my first thing. And then anything else I can get done, that's just bonus, right? And you can probably get lots of bonus. But I think it takes some pressure off of us if we realize that, like, our first goal is that we're trying to create some relationships with these kids, show them the joy of learning about the gospel, and be a source of kindness and stability for them. So we have two other goals, of course, that you're going to be thinking about. So one of those is the unit goals. I'm going to rush these kind of quickly because I'm a little bit over time, which is bad modeling of pacing. So unit goals are what's going to be provided for you in your binder. So that's going to be sort of the overarching theme that's in the quarter. So when you get your binders, they're going to tell you what that is. Rich and I taught third grade 2 quarters ago. Our topic was choose and serve. And so what we did for that, got this idea from Joanne Reese in the back, is we created an evidence board on the wall. It was like a wall of fame or shame, and it was basically all the lessons were about people who had chosen wisely to serve God and people who had chosen poorly. And so we could visually represent up on this wall what our major critical concept for the unit was. Like, our, you know, making good choices, where can we see examples of that? And kids could look at that and refer to it. They built some of their own things that went on that evidence board, drawing scriptures, comments, answers to questions, so that it was reflective of their own learning as well. So that's something you can do to kind of get kids from your lesson goal to the unit goal and making those connections. Your lesson goal is what's that content in that particular lesson that you want your kids to get that's going to be provided for you in the binder, but what you do with that and how you kind of extrapolate that out is part of the lesson planning part that Rachel's going to be covering with you in a little bit. Tish is going to come up here right now to talk about pacing. Before I sit down, I just want to tell you that the first activity we did was a think, pair, share, which is something you can do in your class. So basically you have kids think on their own, write something down, or talk with a friend if they're not writing yet. And then when they talk with a friend, they get new ideas that they can add to their own arsenal, and then you want some share out that you can reinforce and maybe repackage and, you know, and connect to other ideas. So that's something you can try with anyone who's verbal. So I would say 3-4 up. Tish.
Okay. I have that in mind, too. Think
okay,
your share.
Good. There we go. Okay, so we want to actually switch PowerPoints. We don't need to switch. Okay. We just need to
So I was at a conference, and I missed last week, and so our PowerPoints are separate.
We can go to view. But we did weirdly choose the exact
same
layout
one,
design.
And I have Think, Pair, Share in there, too.
Super simpatico. Mm-hmm.
So mine is pacing, and we're talking about long-term pacing, which you're thinking about the whole quarter as a whole piece. And then we're talking about pacing per lesson. So you need to have pacing in both. And so the first thing we're going to look at is the long-term pacing. So did you have mine? Mine's just down here.
Do you see it down there?
Right there. Okay. Just click on that one.
Woohoo!
What's your pace? I'm not talking about per mile. But you do want a specific pace when you're running because you want to finish under a certain time, right? Same thing with teaching. When you're in the full quarter, you have a quarter to teach these lessons, and you need to finish them within a certain time. So, go ahead. This is the term in education. Pacing in education is a term used to describe how teachers move through lesson plans both on a daily basis and in the long term. So, in short, making the most use of your time. Be intentional about everything that you do. So everything has a purpose and an intention behind it. So for the little ones, when they come in, there's Play-Doh sitting on the table. There's an intention behind that, right? Little hands are busy while other students are coming in. There's an intention. Okay, next one. So the long term, let's talk about that one first. That's the map, the scope and sequence, how we're going to get from one point to the end with our objectives being met. Often, if you don't have pacing, your objectives may not be met. So the elders have kind of like an essential question for each binder. This is what we want to cover. This is the goal that we want to reach. Here are some lessons to learn that. And sometimes it's in sequence. Sometimes it's not. But you want to follow it through, and you want to look at it as a whole unit first. That's the first thing you want to do, is look at the whole binder as a whole unit. What's our objective for this quarter? Okay. This is kind of small, but I wanted to keep it. I'm talking kind of fast, so I feel like I need to hurry up. 10 minutes is like nothing for a teacher. Okay, so the first thing you want to do, like I said, look through that binder, look at all the lessons that you have. And then we're going to talk about a quarterly pacing calendar, which is this one. So teachers do this all the time. We look at it for the whole year. We need to be on topic 9 in math by December so we can finish the topic by whenever, when the test is. Same with our quarter, right? We want to have a certain amount of lessons taught by a midpoint so that we get to the end. So you're going to calculate how many lessons do you have in your binder, how many days do you have in your quarter. They're not always exactly the same, right? Some quarters are a little off by a week or two or a couple days, or maybe there is VBS in the middle of that quarter. Maybe there's a singing on a certain day. So you want to kind of plan ahead and think about that and map out your entire quarter. It doesn't take very long when you think about it. So I have a calendar, and it's basically 2 days a week, because we have Sunday, Wednesday. And then you just map out the lesson. That's the binder. One thing that this really helps for, if you wanted to do a project, maybe you wanted to grow a plant to show the glory that God has created, and you have a little seed sprout.
I know.
Follow me. it's much more effective if you can plant that seed and have it sprout before the end of the quarter. I don't know about you, This has probably never happened to you. It's never happened to me. But you bring it home, and you forget to water it. Mom and Dad forget to water it. It didn't sprout. Or you get it in the car, and it spills everywhere. So it's a little more effective if you can accomplish the sprouting during the quarter, and you can talk about it. But you have to plan that out, right? You have to know how long is it going to take to sprout, when do I need to plant that, so I have it done at the end. You can also sprinkle in there, okay, I'm going to do a couple coloring pages here. I'm going to do a little more hands-on type activities. You're going to switch it up so you can kind of see if you're being too monotonous or not, and you kind of need to mix it up. And you're trying to avoid the, I wish I would have, I wish I could have. We've all done that. Oh, that would have been cool if we would have brought that in. But if you think about it beforehand, you can kind of plan that out. Like bring in food, like the spies brought back food, and you can bring some of those foods to taste. They love that kind of stuff. Okay, short-term pacing. This is the daily lesson. And Rachel's going to get into the how. I'm going to talk about the why. Why do you need to have this? So just like within the quarter, you've paced it out, you've got your quarter all lined up, you know what you're teaching on what day, and that could change. Things are going to happen, you've got to mix it up, that's normal. So, but you need to have pace during your actual lesson. Each amount of time is chunked out, and you've got a plan for each chunk of time. It's not just, oh, I guess we'll just cover the last 15 minutes. If you're 3, 4, and 5, and your boy, I had 3 of them, they're not going to enjoy coloring for 20 minutes, probably. So you want to think of each chunk of time. So you're thinking of 3 and 4-year-olds, they've got like 4 minutes, right, to talk to them. So you want to make sure you have all of your time planned out and you're over-prepared. Why do we want to do this? Because we want to maximize student engagement. We want them engaged the whole time and to feel like, wow, that went fast. That was super fun. That means your pacing was good. So our intention behind short-term pacing is, like I said, you're intentional about everything. The goal, of course, this may not happen because there's a human element to everything, but 100% of the students engage 100% of the time. And you're just moving along, and you've got a plan. Okay, and you can set timers if you need to, and you're watching the clock. Move on to the next thing. And you know what? They'll let you know, I'm done with this. How do they let you know I'm done with this? Their friend becomes their chatting partner, or sometimes boys like to just, let's see what that does. So that will kind of happen, right? So give good pacing gives the students the illusion of speed. Effective pacing during the lesson helps the teacher hold the student's attention, and the lesson appears to unfold quickly. Are we done already? Wow, that was super fun. That means you did your job. Okay, when you move too slowly and things that can interrupt your pacing are, I'm over here, where is it? And you're doing this. What's happening to 3 and 4-year-olds while you're doing that? A lot of craziness, right? Sometimes. Who knows what's happening? But then you have to bring them back in. So then your pacing was, it was interrupted. So you want to have all your stuff laid out and you're prepared to go. So all you have to do is go like this and we're going to the next thing. And you have it all lined up in an order. When you get when you do this, it comes easy. It seems overwhelming at first, but it's pretty easy. Once you got your stuff, boom, and you're just grabbing it, we're moving on. Talking too much for the little ones, giving instructions. You've got like, what, 4 minutes to hold their attention, and you got to be moving to the next thing. Story time is a little different. Probably you have a little more time with that, but you're doing some engagement things while you're teaching. You're not just sitting there talking to them for that amount of time. If you're moving too slowly, bored students, and that's when students misbehave. Next one. This is nice, I'm my own personal clicker. Okay, same thing can happen when you're moving too quickly. Like, I'm moving really fast, I'm talking super fast. But if you're moving too fast, they don't understand what you're saying, they mentally check out. So they'll just start kind of watching the bug over there. And you need to watch them, and you're connected with them. What are they telling you by their body language? You can tell if they're into it or not. Do I need to move on a little bit, or do I need to slow down? You can ask questions and see where they're at. Helpful tip, the timer. I have a timer in my classroom. It's 3 minutes. It's one of the sand timers, so you can see it. It's a big one. Okay, you got 3 minutes to get your stuff out. That's it. And it's more than enough time. So maybe we're cleaning things up. Okay, we have 2 minutes. Little ones love this.
this is so fun. Let's hurry up and clean up. Oh no, time is running out. We need to meet at the carpet.
Stuff like that. So that we're not sitting here forever because so and so, some of us, they want to move really slow. Okay. They don't want to do it. Right? So that motivates everyone to be involved with we're cleaning up, we're going to the carpet, we're there, and you're modeling with them. Okay. I went to a conference and this is what I learned, and I brought one of the things I learned. To keep students engaged. And as you can see, the first one is organized for learning. If you're prepared and organized for the learning, your students will be engaged because you're prepared for every little thing that might happen. You are troubleshooting before it's actually happened, right? You're thinking ahead, that could be a problem. How do I fix that? So if you're prepared, things seem to go much more smoothly. You got to have attention strategies, which you guys have already talked about. Proximity. So in a real perfect world, there would be like an aisle here, and I'd be walking around, and I'd be making, you know, hi, don't you love that? What do you use for strategies to get attention? Do you have one? Okay, something like that. You're walking around, just like, don't ask me. And you're doing this, right, throughout. But when our classes are small, we can get close. But we want proximity. Positive feedback. Kind of want to stop on this one for a second. Especially the little ones. They love this. Like, they love it. 3, 4, 5-year-olds love it. Even the big ones. But you change how you talk, right? So, and be very specific about that. Because if you're doing that throughout the lesson, ooh, they're engaged. Because I want her to say that about me, right? I want her to notice that I'm being good. Or I'm making good choices. So you're trying to get the little ones back. We're trying to pray. And some of them are just talking and doing all this stuff. They can't seem to get that one over there to stop talking. Like Gianna. So you will notice someone who is doing what they should be doing. So you say, oh, I love the way Susie is sitting. She has a calm, quiet body. Her mouth is off. I love that. When you start whispering to them, weird. They start doing this. So whisper to them, it's like, who's next? They will all start doing this. And so then you want to call out each one. Are they engaged? Yes. They want to be noticed. So we all want to be noticed, right? Especially the little ones. And they want to see that you notice them. Okay, so put time limits on things. Don't spend forever on something. Voice. Don't be boring. Next one. Okay, this one, which I thought was really cool, one of a way to keep students engaged is the think, pair, share. 100% of the students are engaged because there's different types of students. You're asking a question, you haven't even finished the question, and there's Joey, oh, I got it, and I haven't finished the question. And then there's the other one over here in the corner who's like, yeah, I'm not raising my hand, but I'm going to let you know anyway. I'm just going to shout that out because I don't think you're going to call on me. So I'm just going to say, I know it. And then there's invisible Susie in the back corner who's like, don't look at me. Don't make eye contact with her. We don't want invisible Susie to be invisible in the back. We want her to pair and share, right? Takes the pressure off of people like that who don't want to raise their hand. And they're getting to know the people in their class. And then you can ask them, does anybody want to share? Maybe Invisible Susie might raise her hand. Maybe she will. But she got an opportunity to talk to someone else. Here's a way of rephrasing a question so you have everyone involved. Because what happens when someone raises their hand, everyone else's engagement goes down. Because they're going to answer it for me. I can just relax. We want everyone to be participating. So you could say, instead of how many characters are in the story, you could say, okay, what do you think about that question? And on my signal, show me with your fingers how many characters are in the story. And then maybe you could look, and you'll see them doing this. That's totally fine, right? But it's getting everyone thinking, and they're doing providing their own response, not just relying on Joey, who always raises his hand, right? We want them to be thinking too. Monitoring progress, and then celebrate when you can. So those are things that teachers are supposed to do all the time, and you guys can do it too. You don't need to have education or go to a conference to do that. These are things that we do all the time without knowing it. But you have to be intentional about that, right? You're going to say, okay, today I'm going to do at least once or twice a think, pair, share. You're intentional about it. Because if you don't plan for it, it's not natural to you, you won't do it. And you can just say, I'm just going to do that one time. Or, okay, I'm going to make sure I at least one time call out, oh, I love that. I love the way you're sitting. You are so engaged right now. Let's that. Right? At least one time. Okay, I think, did I go over?
You're good.
Okay.
You are good.
Sorry, I'm talking so fast. I'm like, 10 minutes, what? I can spend a whole class on that. Okay, so hopefully you learned something on how to pace your quarter in the lesson.
All right, so now what we're going to do is take the things that Letitia talked about and Amy talked about, and we're going to start figuring out how to plan an effective lesson. So you're going to get a notebook, that, and I'm not a notebook.
Binder.
Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. You're going to get a binder, and it's going to map out what the lesson is going to entail. So that part's given to you. Now, what you're going to be doing is you're going to be figuring out how to teach that effectively. So the first thing I want to talk about is a routine. So that's going to be what you're going to focus on, and every age needs a routine. Whether that routine is, you know, we come in, we pray, then we go to blah, then we go to blah, then we go to blah. So that you have a set routine each time. The reason why we use routines in teaching is because it allows for the environment to feel safe. And so when a child feels safe in an environment, then they're able, more likely, to listen and want to learn. So that's the first goal with the routine. The second one is it allows you to work with those pacings. It allows you to know, okay, I need a certain amount of time for each thing so that I can get my point across. Because you could be spending 10 minutes on something that's not important, and you've missed a lot of that time to be able to give the important things. So routine allows you as a teacher to go, okay, I need to keep this flowing so that I can make sure that I can teach effectively and teach the things that I need to teach. So that's one of the points of routine. Another thing with routines is children actually, when they know what's going to happen next, they are a lot more engaged. So if they know that they're going to be praying, they're ready for it. They're not wondering what's going to happen next. They're ready to go on to the next thing. So it allows you for classroom management, which you guys already had, right? They had classroom management to go, okay, that's a great strategy to keep them ready for the next thing so that there's not a lot of interruptions, a lot of problems. So one of the things with routine that I love to do is I put it up on the board. So usually I'll have it up in this little section up here, and I'll write the whole routine out. So that if I lose track, I can look up there and go, oh, shoot, I forgot to pray. Oh, man, I forgot to do that. Or, yes, we're moving on to this. This is working. So it's good to have a visual for your routine on a constant basis. So once you get your materials, you get into your classroom, get your routine established and written up here so that you're ready to go. All right. In the papers that we passed out before, we gave you some outlines of a lesson plan. So again, you're going to be getting a binder, so you're not going to need to be able to plan what the lesson is going to be, but you're going to want to be organized. And so that's what this is going to help you to do. It's going to help you to organize. So I'm going to work with these two because I put these ones together and I know them a little bit more thoroughly. So this one is just for you to be able to copy so that you can be able to implement this if you would like to use it. And this breaks it down, so we're going to look at this one that's breaking it down with all the words on it. This one is geared more towards the older students, and it also is broken down here. It's one that I pulled off the internet, another great resource. But like I said, I made this one. Sorry. All right. So the first thing that you want to do is, is you're going to look at your binder, and you're going to start breaking it down. So you know you have 45 minutes in a class. And you're not just going to lecture the whole class. You're going to want to break it up so that the children are engaged. We call that active learning, where we're not just lecturing the whole time. We're involving them in different activities. And so that's what this is going to help you to do. It's going to help you to plan, make sure that those activities are executed. And so the first thing that you're going to want to have is an opening. And up here you'll see the opening usually lasts, I would say, no more than 7 minutes.
And you'll look at my timings. They're kind of, they're more than 45 minutes, but because you're going to sometimes, something's going to take 10 minutes, sometimes it's going to take 5 minutes. So you're going to, you know, figure it out so that you can make that whole 45 minutes work. And you're going to have some times where there's questions, so it's going to take a little bit longer, or you're going to have some times where there's disruption, so it's going to take a little longer. So you kind of have to gauge what those minutes are really going to be like when you're thinking about it. So an opening is usually like something like songs to get them engaged, or icebreaker. I could never remember that one anymore. An icebreaker to get them engaged. Something that's going to get them engaged. Get them back into the class. Like Amy was saying, they're going to come from all kinds of different things happening before they get to Bible class. You want to start getting them engaged. Then the next thing is going to be your main concept. So you're going to want to think about what is that whole point that I want to get across. And it might be a list of things, but it might just be one thing. And so you're going to list that. And now that's what you're going to base everything else on. It's that main point. You're going to go, okay, how am I going to get that point across? And I'm going to get that point across not just by lecturing, but I'm going to get that point across by activities as well. So your activities need to be meaningful. It can't just be Play-Doh. I mean, that's a great opening activity, but it's not a great engaging activity to teach the lesson. And you're going to be going over a lot more techniques as you guys go through this. They're going to be modeled for you, so that'll be great. And then you're also going to want to have some type of assessment, and we're going to model that in just a minute. But what the assessment will do is not to test how smart your children are. It's going to test, did you get that point across? Was it received? Did they understand what you were teaching? Then if it wasn't, you might have to take Wednesday to reteach it. Or you might have to go, okay, this is going too fast. I need to slow it down. Or this might be going too slow. I need to pace it. Fill the time a little bit faster. So that's what that assessment is for. It's for you to figure out if your teaching is effective. Is it working? And then you're going to have a closing. And for little ones, again, that might be a song, a dance. Just kidding. Some type of little something to kind of remind them that this is done. And for the older ones, it might be, relating it to real life. So it might be, all right, now let's talk about how this is going to go out into the world so that they can, you know, use the things that they practice off into the world. So you're going to have to figure out what type of activities that you're going to want to do to close that. And you're going to have to figure that out at a time. You also want to put in a memory verse at some point. We all, Bible memory verses are extremely important at all ages. I teach it even to my little babies when they're coming in. I have a memory verse. And it's the same verse the whole time. But they are able to repeat it back by the end. So we do put in a time to at least practice a memory verse. And so this is just kind of a map to make you get to the end. And it's helpful to do these. This is going to help you with your pacing, like Letitia was talking about. It's going to help you with your planning. It's going to help you feel more comfortable about your lesson so that when you get in there, you're not stressed and worrying about what's going to be taught next. It's just going to help you to focus all your ideas. And then Amy's going to go over assessments with you.
Okay. Well, as Rachel was just articulating, the assessments do come this way.
That way will be great.
Assessments are not for the kids, they're for you. They're designed to let you know whether you've met your target, whether you have achieved your objective. And so we don't give tests, you know, to kids in Bible class in general. Although I would like to say that Kathleen Alexander gave us a test after, you know, and I really did not want to disappoint her, and so I was very attentive. But that was for her. I mean, on some level, sure, it was for me to see that I was learning what she wanted me to, but really it was for her. If she had a certain number of kids that just kept getting confused about whether her statement was true or false, then she knew that that was part of her lesson that she wanted to dwell on a little more and go back and reteach. And so that's the function of an assessment. And that can be done in lots of different ways. Kids can show you their learning kind of traditional question-answer ways, and they can do it in other ways, especially if they're younger. You can have them point to something. Who's the person in this picture who's making the good choices? Point to that person, and then you can kind of expand on that. So I want to talk to you just a little bit about levels of questioning, three different types of questioning that you can use if you are going to use the question-answer strategy, which is, I think, the easiest and sort of the most natural to us when we're communicating with young people. So a level, there's three levels. A level one question is like a basic recall question. So that's kind of like what's in the text. So you might ask, what was the name of our character today? And the students could respond with that, ah, his name was Abraham, for example. A level two question would be a sort of between the lines question that asks students, invites them to sort of consider or speculate why it is that someone in the Bible made the choice they made. So for example, why do you think Jonah did not want to go to Nineveh? There are things in the text that inform our understanding, right, of that, but you want to try to get them like a little bit deeper with a level two question. And then a level three question is your beyond question, and that gets you outside of the text and to an application. Okay, so what is the story of Jonah and the example of his disobedience mean for us? How does that translate to me tomorrow? What am I going to do with that? So that's your level three question, kind of your application question. So you can think of questioning in those two ways, and even with older learners, it's always good to start with level one, right? And just make sure you have your basics down, and then you can move on to your level two and level three questions. Some of those questions are going to be provided for you in the binders, but what I've noticed is they're not necessarily divided up according to level, so they are kind of mixed in. You might like things that way. I don't, because what happens is you've warmed up your learners, right, and they're ready to maybe answer a question, but they're still in the level one place. And you haven't gotten to them all, but now you've moved on to a level two, and you're more timid Susies are maybe not ready for a level two, right? So I like to group them so that I can make sure that I give kids different opportunities to answer different types of questions throughout the lesson. And when I think of lesson, I really think of like the Sunday and Wednesday, because it's usually one lesson that you're teaching on Sunday and then reinforcing on Wednesday and reviewing on Wednesday. So I like to think of it that way. And I wanted to talk to you really quickly about a strategy called Stronger and Clearer Each Time, because I too went to a teaching conference, and and this is something that I found works really well, and we tried it with the third graders, and it works well for high school. It does take a little bit of organization, so you probably want your kids, this is like kindergarten and up, just because if they're used to the classroom setting, then I think they have some skills to handle the independence that's required of this activity. But essentially what you do with Stronger and Clearer Each Time is you're trying to get students to say more and more specifically about their understanding of a topic, in this case, the Bible. And so you would group students up and have them make two circles. So you have an inner circle and an outer circle. And the inner circle is the one that moves, and the outer circle is the one that stays still. So your inner circle person is going to face your outer circle person, and you're going to ask them a question. Like you might say, tell your partner, inner circle person, tell your partner what you know about the threefold promise. So they'll say whatever it is that they know, and then the outer circle person, you'll say, okay, outer circle person, if you have something to add that they didn't say, throw that out there. So then they'll say, and then the group will move. So the inner circle will move one person, and then they're going to answer the exact same question. Hey, tell this person everything you know about the threefold promise. So they'll say what they know, but they now have something maybe new to add to their arsenal. Or through speaking it, they understand it better, right? So you have them go around the circle stronger and clearer each time. So then at the end, when you have, okay, everyone back to their seats, you can ask the volunteers to say, and they've got a more intelligent, well thought out, and deep way of expressing whatever that original question was, the response to that original question. And it also gets them used to talking to other people about the Bible, which is a skill we want them to develop as well. So I wanted to share that strategy with you. I have not heard my first bell, but according to this clock, we have about one more minute. So when we talk about closure, we want to remind you of a couple of things. The binders, we really want to stay in the classroom, because as the teachers are moving through the rooms, in between, we're trying to make sure we got copies on each binder, and if your binder has left with you, then you're going to show up and you won't have the copies that you need for that lesson. We also want to invite you, if you haven't already, to write your name on the white label that's on the binding of your binder. That way you know it's yours. It doesn't require you to sit in the exact same seat every time. You're free to pick up that binder and move to a different spot and get yourself a new partner for your Think for Share. But the binder does stay in the room because you stay in the room. And you'll be back here on Wednesday to hear about the binders. Freaking the binders. All right. And that's our class.
But yes. I have a question about the Think for Share.
Yes.
Do you always use a card, a 3x5 card?
No, I don't always use a 3x5 card. I would only use that with for learners who were good writers, right? So if I had like maybe second and up, I wouldn't necessarily need to be a card too. You know, you might have kids come in with like a coloring page or a crossword or something while you're waiting for all the kids to come in. You could have them flip the paper over and write an answer. But you do want to give them time to think independently,
right.
The think part, and that can just be in their head or anything.
So for the little ones, like for 4 and 5 year olds, you would have them crisscross applesauce on the carpet, turn and face each other, and just have a dialogue, and then turn back and face the teacher.
Right.
Okay. That's great.
And we're done.
Nice job.